Hi, everybody. Welcome to Sex Abuse Topics. I'm your host, Kathy Cassidy, and I'm a clinical forensic therapist. Today's podcast is going to be about a really super scary time when I first started working in the jail. This was my first experience working with the inmate population. Before that, I had only worked in psychiatric inpatient, which is its own culture. And the jail was really different, and I was not prepared with the education I had at that point, I don't think, for dealing with what I was about to walk into. So as a therapist in the jail, at least the one that I worked at, my job was to do they're called just intakes. So basically gather a bunch of information when the inmates come in fresh from the street and gather everything about their history and find out mostly if they're suicidal, what kind of placement I would recommend. Like if they're in a certain gang, we have to recommend, you know, that they're not placed with the opposite gang. So that was one part of my job. The other part was the inmates were allowed to submit what's called a kite. I don't even know the real name for it, but in jail it's called a kite. And they can submit a form to mental health requesting that, you know, if they need to talk about something. So I would, you know, those would be submitted by the correctional officers. And then when I would come in each day, I would go through them and go through the requests and then meet up with the inmates and talk with them very minimally. Like they didn't really get therapy, so to speak, but kind of like a little mini session to help them out with whatever was going on. The other part of my job was doing suicide assessments. So in the jail, it's divided up in pods, and you know, there's different areas. There's like a general population, there's a confinement area for the inmates who are in trouble. There's also something where I worked, I don't know if this is in every jail, called a special needs unit. So the mental health people, which was me and others, but we would work, there would be one therapist per shift. So every day on our shift, we had to go to the special needs unit and check in with the inmates. So basically in that unit was mostly filled with inmates who were charged with sex crimes. So, of course, there's people in the jail who've committed sex crimes, but that's not what they're charged with. And when you have a sex crime as your main charge, typically the jail will put you in the special needs unit so that you don't get beat up or killed or preyed upon by the other inmates, because most inmates absolutely despise sex offenders. So they're at a high risk of being injured. And because they're under the watch of the county jail or the Department of Corrections, they have somewhat of an obligation to keep them safe. Kind of ironic, really, but that's how it goes. So in the special needs unit are mostly filled with charged sex offenders, also inmates who are on what's called a suicide precaution, which I will describe that to you in a second. It's also filled with people who have a diagnosed mental illness and they're really struggling, like they're unstable. And then it might have, say there was anyone who had like a high profile crime, if it was really like a big case, they would be in there. So that whole unit was usually filled with people who needed to be protected for some reason from the general population. So let me tell you about suicide precautions, or I'm sorry, when they're on a suicide watch, that's what it's called in the jail. So what that means is the inmate has made some statement to a staff, or for some reason the staff feels that they are at a high risk of killing themselves. Then they have to be assessed by the therapist, which would be whoever's on shift, to determine if they really were suicidal. And if they really were suicidal, then they would go on what was called the suicide watch. When I found out what that meant, because in the hospital it's very different, Suicide watch in a jail means that you are going to be stripped naked, no clothing whatsoever, other than this article of material. I wouldn't call it clothing. It's called a suicide smock where I worked, and it's kind of made up of the material that are made, that moving blankets are made of, that like really rough material. I don't know what that's called, but it's very stiff. And it really looks like a smock, like their head, it goes over their head, their arms come out of it, and then it almost looks like a dress, and they have no clothes under it. So the reason for that is so that they can't take anything, they can't rip it up or cut it up and hang themselves, because that material is really tough. Okay, so they get stripped down, they wear the suicide smock, and then they go into a cell in the special needs unit. And in that cell, they have nothing. They have, I feel like, honestly, it's been a long time. I worked there a long time ago. If I remember right, I don't even think they had blankets or pillows or sheets. And that was also because they could take their pillows apart and use the strings that sew a pillow together to cut themselves. You would not believe. Anyone who has not worked in a jail or doesn't know anybody, your mind would be absolutely blown away by the creativity and just how unbelievably resourceful these guys and women, how they think. So things that you would never imagine that could be a danger for someone to kill themselves with, like a pillow, it is. And then the sheets, for those, I didn't think it was obvious at the time, but I guess, you know, if you're really suicidal, they could use sheets, they tie them together and hang themselves, which has happened in many, many jails and prisons. So when you're on the suicide watch, you don't get anything, nothing. The cell is empty. So the first time I ever went into a suicide watch assessment for an inmate, I was like, oh goodness, like this guy has... I mean, you can't see their private area, but you know they're naked, and it's kind of weird the first time that I had to do that. Anyways, so part of my job was always every day going to the special needs unit. No matter what, I had to do that to assess the people that were already on suicide watch and check in with them, determine if they needed to stay on watch or recommend to the psychiatrist that they were doing better because of maybe they were on new meds that the doctor prescribed, maybe some miracle happened because they didn't get really therapy, something changed that they were ready to go back to their unit. Okay, so that's that part of it. So every day that I worked, I was in that unit. Oh, also, I told you, the sex offenders. So going in there, you know, the inmates, it's... Where I worked, it was kind of a circular area. So the cells are wrapped around, and then in the center is where the correctional officer would sit so he could have full view of everyone. And there were two levels. So there was an upstairs, and everything's out in the open. And then, so I would come in. My office happened to be right next to that one. So I was there regularly. So the inmates naturally get to know you because you're coming in all the time, every day. And it's kind of crazy how they would know. They would know I was there even just by, like, if you wore lotion or perfume, which I learned and you don't ever wear anything because they can literally smell you coming. It's kind of crazy. Things that you wouldn't even think of. Oh my goodness, I'll do another podcast on that because that was just crazy when I had to learn how to act and dress and be. So, I was new there and going in to do my assessments, and there was a day room. So that was also in the center right by where the correctional officer sat, directly in the center. And there were like little tables that were cemented to the ground, and the tables were cement also. And so were the chairs. And that was so that nobody could lift or throw anything at each other. And the inmates that had privileges would be out during certain times they were allowed to be out. And they would be playing cards, drawing, talking, whatever was going on. So typically the inmates that I was there to assess were locked in their cells. So I would have to walk around or through the day area to get to the correctional officer because he was the one that would come with me. He would like guide, I don't know the right word, but he would be with me during all of my checks next to me. And I would tell him which inmates I was there to see, and then we would go up together, talk to the inmate. He would just stand by to make sure, you know, that everything was safe. And then I would keep it moving. Okay, so as I'm doing this, I'm new, day by day, going in. There happened to be, and you know, being new there and new to corrections, I was just like hanging on for dear life in my mind. Of course, not showing it, but just trying to like make my way to the officer, learn all the codes to get to him. It was a lot. So I was aware of my surroundings, of course. I'm always like that. But you can only be so aware when you're learning so much at one time. So I would definitely notice the same, you know, the certain inmates that were out in the day room. And hindsight, there was one inmate who he seemed more like quote unquote normal compared to the others. He didn't seem as creepy or mean or weird or like nothing stood out about him. But he always did like, just hindsight, definitely. I didn't notice it at the time. He would always go out of his way when I would come in to like circle around me and say, oh, hi, Miss Kathy, how are you today? And very friendly. And I just was kind of like relieved this was one less guy I had to worry about. And I really never thought about him. Okay, so that's him. So I would do my rounds, go through. I was only there a few weeks. I was building a pretty decent rapport with the officers as well as the inmates, as I think, you know, had a reputation of being fair, having compassion, like keeping myself together, which was a miracle that I did, because it really was a pretty scary experience in the beginning. I didn't allow myself to really acknowledge that because I just didn't. You have to like focus and concentrate and keep the goal of your work at the forefront of your brain. So, okay. One day, I don't know how long I was there. Like I said, a few weeks. I walk in like I would any other day. I had to get, you know, buzzed in through the control center. So they would know, you call through the radio and say, hey, and you don't say, hey, you say a bunch of Morse codes to get through. And they open the door to the special needs unit. I walk in, do my normal thing. But this time I walked in and the correctional officer like kind of put his hand up to me to stop and was coming right towards me at the opening of the door, of the unit door. So I stood there and just waited like he told me, and he came right up to me and he said, listen, and he was kind of talking quiet, and again, hindsight, all the inmates were looking, but I didn't realize that because they watch every single solitary thing that goes on like with precision. So he's talking to me kind of quietly and he says, listen, you can't come in here today. There's an inmate we found out from the other inmates in the unit, he's been watching you. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, he is telling the other inmates that he's planning to rape you. And I really felt like my blood probably went black. I don't know. Oh, God, I still remember it. I was like, planning to rape me. Jesus, Mary, Lord of God, what in the hell? So I'm keeping the straight face. I don't know how. And I'm like, what? And I said, who? Which inmate is it? And he said, if you look directly behind me, look up to the second floor, and the cell is right above my head. So he didn't want to, you know, make it obvious. So I look up, I scan, and I see all the inmates are just watching the whole damn thing go on. They probably knew what he was telling me because they're the ones who informed him of it. And I look, and all I see, they were called chuck holes. And above the chuck hole, which is what they open to, like, pass meds and put the handcuffs on. It's that little slot that you guys probably see in shows or if you've ever been in jail. Above the chuck hole in the special needs unit is a little window. I'm sure it's not glass. I don't know. It's plastic. But the inmates can look out of that little window and watch everything, which they do all the time. So I look up above him and above the chuck hole, the little window, all they see are these like little beady eyes. I really couldn't make out the face of who it was. It was the whatever that material of plexiglass or whatever it is. It's not super clear. So I'm trying to figure out who this is. Whoever it was, he was watching. And I was like, oh God, I don't know who that is. And then he gave me his name. And I was like, okay, of course I left the unit. And they were calling all of the other officers to confront him about it and handle it however they were going to handle it, which I'll tell you about that in a minute. So I go back to my office trying not to, like, literally pee my pants. Like, what in the living hell? Oh, my God. So I jump on my computer and I look up this guy's name. And if it isn't the freaking guy who's always super nice and normal, that guy, it was him. I'm like, what? This is the guy? The friendly guy? The one that I thought was like the normal, so to speak, guy in the unit? He's the one saying he's going to rape me? Oh, my Lord. So I went to the medical unit, which is where all the records were held. I look up this inmate because he was never on my radar. I didn't even know why he was in the special needs unit because there's a lot of them in there. And you know, as my role as a therapist, I'm only checking in with everyone that's on my list. This guy was never on my list, so there was no reason for me to look him up or have any. He was nothing, you know, nothing on my radar. So I look him up in medical, in the records. And I know I sound dramatic, but I felt dramatic. I thought I was going to fall out of my chair. This friggin' guy was in jail being charged with carjacking. And I went through the file and found all of the information, the police reports and all of the other things. So basically what he did was he was in a parking lot one day. One sunny day, daytime, bright out, normal, not nighttime, went to a woman's car. She was getting in her car, and he intercepted her getting into her car, and he carjacked her. But before he took her car, he beat the holy shit out of her and raped her horribly, and then he stole her car. Now, the charge for him was carjacking, and I don't think he had a sex crime charge, if I remember right, but the main charge was carjacking. And then once you read the report, I don't know why he wasn't charged with a sex crime, but I was absolutely freaking mortified. So not only did he look the most normal, but his charge didn't even reflect what he did, like beating the woman and horribly raping her. And then not to mention he had a history of other carjacking charges in his past. So this guy was like a horribly violent guy, a super sexual predator against adult women. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I couldn't believe it. So as I'm doing this, I find out from the sergeant that was on duty at that time what they did, what the officers did while I was reading that information, and they were keeping me away from there, was they all went to him. They go in groups for safety, or I don't know what the real reason, I don't know. All of them went into the special needs unit, confronted him about what was being said about him saying he was going to rape me, and he admitted to it. So they put him, I don't know if he admitted, but they, for whatever reason, they believed the rumor that he was going to try to rape me. And they put him in solitary confinement, which I later found out he got beat up really pretty severely for saying that about me. And one thing, you know, that I did find is if the inmate population does like you, they definitely, it sounds maybe weird to some people, but they definitely like look out for you, some of them. And so when the rumor was spreading, it spread through the whole jail. It's like an unbelievable high school kind of mentality. I mean, stuff travels like faster than you would imagine. And when you first start working there, you don't think they have the capability, but they do. And it happens. And I'll tell you about that in another podcast, how everything travels through a prison or jail. So the other inmates found out what he was saying about me. And when he got to solitary, they beat the holy crap out of him. So that was my story. And I obviously was so green in the field, but it was kind of good that it happened very early in my career in corrections, because it kept me very aware that it didn't matter now what anyone looked like, and to really just be on a whole different level of awareness while I'm working with these guys. And it kind of, you know, it means like you can never let your guard down, ever. Doesn't matter what they're in for, what they're charged with. You don't really know what they're thinking. And just because somebody wasn't charged with something in their history doesn't mean they haven't done it in their life. So that was like a whole new way of thinking for me. And, you know, this podcast and then the future ones that I'll share with you about my experiences working in the jail were exactly the reasons why I went back to school, because at that point I only had one master's degree in counseling psychology, and that did not prepare me in any way, shape, or form to work with the inmate population. So after these few horrifying experiences, and thank God I didn't get hurt, those were the exact reasons why I went on and got a second master's, because it didn't benefit me financially in any way. Actually, it brought me in like a much deeper debt for school, but I needed to be prepared through a formal education also, like how to deal with this population and work with them in a way that's effective for them and without me getting raped or killed. So I went on to get another degree that specialized in working with inmates and in the legal system. And that was the one for forensic psychology, which definitely did help me. But I wanted to share that story with you. That's kind of part of my journey. Oh, God, that was so awful. And every blue moon, I definitely still look him up. And he's still incarcerated, thank God, for different things. But remember, some minor details are changed for the story so that to protect the privacy. But it's still, everything I told you is exactly the gist of what you need to know, that just characterizes the most important parts of that experience. So hope you guys enjoyed this podcast, and stay safe and stay aware of your surroundings, even if you don't work in a jail. Thanks, you guys.